Gray Fredrickson is an amazing individual. He's a producer on virtually every one of the top 10 movies of all time produced in America. We're talking about The Godfathers, all three of them. Well, maybe not three, but certainly the first two. Apocalypse Now and The Outsiders and so forth. Would you welcome, please, Gray Fredrickson, ladies and gentlemen. Gray was good. I liked it. What happened there with three? There seemed to be a little...
Do you know that it did about $150 million at the box office?
Yeah.
And it was nominated for 7 Academy Awards and won about 30 awards.
Yeah.
So I'm not real embarrassed by it.
No. That's what I was saying. Frankly, I'm waiting for four. I don't know. Is four in the works?
I don't think so.
No. Just three. It wasn't two, like the first two of anything anywhere?
They didn't want us to call it part two. They said that no movie's ever been called part two, and it'll confuse everybody. And now look at all the... I've seen movies up to part five, part six.
Yeah, it's ridiculous now.
Yeah.
But yeah, there. I guess there was no Ten Commandments part two.
No.
The accident... You know, where they were smashed by a vehicle in Oklahoma City. And you're from, where'd you go to school? You went to Cassidy High School, right?
I'm from Oklahoma City.
Yeah. And what did you study at Cassidy High School that implied your future greatness?
I had nothing.
Nothing, yeah.
I just struggled to get through school.
Yeah.
And I went to OU. It took me 6 years to graduate. I had to take speech and golf to get my grade point average up to a C.
So you were in sports then? Is that what you're saying?
No, I wasn't even in sports. I was just more into girls. Then I went to Europe and ski-bummed around Europe for a while.
Yeah.
And then ended up working in Rome, Italy, for an engineering company that turned out to be a front for the CIA, but I didn't know it at the time.
Oh, no kidding.
And in Rome, all the Americans hung out at the same places. And most of them were there making movies. And I knew nothing about movies. When I was growing up, they didn't have film schools.
No.
There was no such thing as a film school.
Yeah.
And so I didn't, when I was growing up, no one ever said, I'm going to go be a cameraman or a sound technician or an art director.
Or a best boy, even.
Or a best boy or a, or a grip or anything. where some people said, we're going to go be in Hollywood and be a movie star. Hmm. But I never dreamed about movies. But I started meeting all these people, and they thought I was rich. And
what you were driving?
Because I was driving a Maserati.
Okay.
And I was
Can you back up a little second? How did you get a Maserati and ski bumming around Europe? And
I was making half of my salary that I made at the engineering company were payments on the Maserati.
But in lira, it must seem a lot of money.
Back then, I was making decent money for a single guy. Yeah. And they said, why don't you produce a movie? And I said, oh, that's cool. That'd be fun. How do you produce a movie? They said, just get the money.
Yeah.
And I guess it's still the same today, isn't it? If you get the money, anybody there has got some money, come see me, we'll produce a movie together.
Get the money. So where did you get the money, though? I mean, that becomes...
I came back to Oklahoma, and I went to all my friends that I grew up with and my family and my family's friends, and I raised enough money. It was a little movie we were doing. And the star of it was John Barrymore Jr., who was living in Rome. He's was the father of Drew Barrymore, but she wasn't born yet then.
No.
And so we made this little movie in Rome, and I had no idea what I was doing. But it got made.
Well, there's something that's missing in here. I don't understand. Why would they have suggested to you, because you're driving a nice car, that you could produce a movie? Or were they just trying to, they thought they could hit you up for money themselves to get their thing produced?
Well, yeah, and I became friends with some of these guys, and they were filmmakers, and we would talk about movies, and I loved movies.
Yeah.
And I worked at a movie theater here in Oklahoma City when I was a kid as an usher.
There you go. All right. So there's, we got background.
And I guess they thought I had access to money or had money. And so I parlayed that into a career.
And you did. They sent something about you. You could get it done. And you did. But and what was this film?
Oh, it was a terrible little movie.
Yeah.
It was called Natika. It was about a playboy that ruins a girl's life.
Uh-huh.
And after we made it, I was sitting around the office. We had this little office we paid $50 a month for. And I said, well, why isn't anybody coming to buy the movie? And they said, well, you've got to go sell the movie. And so I smuggled it across the border into France and took it to the Cannes Film Festival, which was a film market. And I saw posters and brochures and flyers and everywhere for all these movies. And all I had was two film cans in the back of my car, back of my Maserati.
Yeah.
So I said, no one's going to come see it. So I hired hippies. Back then in the 60s, there were hippies that would paint chalk drawings on the sidewalks of peace doves and Vietnam, stop the war, and all that kind of stuff. And so I got the hippies, and I gave them a little money. I said, go up and down the Croisset of Cannes and paint C. Natika, which was the name of the movie, and write it in all these different languages in the time and the place. So it was Waye Natika and Zanzi Natika and Haiti Natika, all over the Croisettes on the... And I filled the theater. They said, what a brilliant marketing campaign.
Yeah. The Knack. I think The Knack was about you, wasn't it? Is that possible?
Maybe.
Your story should be filmed. It's a tremendous story, actually. That ever been floated around that you do a movie about you?
I've been writing a book.
Yeah.
Because I got some good stories about
terrific.
The Godfather and Apocalypse Now and the dead body, real dead bodies we have those set in Apocalypse Now and things like that.
I'm sorry? There were real dead bodies in Apocalypse Now?
The prop guy found a man who said, I deliver cadavers to the medical school. Would you like to rent them for the movie? And when I found out about it, I said, you can't have these here. This is not. I saw them. They were all laid out, about 15 of them, all in formaldehyde.
Yeah.
And then the police showed up and said, how do we know? The guy was not selling them. He had been robbing graves.
Oh, my God.
So,
of course, you used them because...
Well, they took our passports, and I was thinking I may never leave the Philippines.
Yeah.
They said, how do we know you didn't have these bodies killed to have in your movie?
And did they ever go to trial? Or
No. They found out that it was okay, and they came and hauled the bodies away. Two Philippine soldiers, it looked like they were about 14, came up in a truck and loaded all the bodies in it and said, where do we take them?
Yeah.
I said, well, yes, to the cemetery. They said, well, we don't have any money to put them in a cemetery. I said, well, I don't know what you do with them. Just make sure they're not here. Yeah. So as they were driving away, they said, well, we'll just take them down and dump them in the ocean down there.
Oh, my God. It was such a good interview until this.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. So you couldn't use them for Apocalypse 2, in other words.
No, we...
Was it supposed to be an Apocalypse 2?
No, Apocalypse 2.
It'd
be
hard to do, really.
Yeah, that
was such a brilliant movie. Was Coppola one of the guys that you met when you first went there?
Yeah, I met him. I had done one movie at Paramount, a movie with Robert Redford called Little Foss and Big Hulls.
Great movie. It's a great movie.
And thank you. And Paramount wanted, they had bought the rights to The Godfather, the book, but they had just finished a movie called... The Brotherhood, starring Kirk Douglas, about mafia.
Yeah.
And it died.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, my gosh, we spent all this money on this book, And no one wants to see a mafia organized crime movie, and it doesn't work. So they said, hire the guys that did the Robert Redford, Little Faust, and Big Halsey. They made it cheap because I had been making Italy movies. They were cheap.
Yeah.
So they hired us to make The Godfather cheap and make it modern day. We were going to shoot it in Kansas City in modern clothes. And Francis Coppola, we hired Francis. That's when I first met Francis. And he said, no, I got to make it true to the book. And so that's the rest is history.
Yeah. Amazing movie. And Apocalypse as well. It seems so incredible to me, all this stuff here. And then did you, along the way, did you develop kind of, I'm not saying legitimate production skills, but I mean, there are probably a lot of things that you didn't know were involved in being a producer of a movie.
Boy, if I had known how much I didn't know, I would have never attempted it in the beginning. But, you know, if you're in something, if you do something for 50 years, eventually a little bit's going to stick. And I think I've learned a little bit.
Yeah. That's my problem. I only have 30 into this, and I still haven't got the hang of it.
You're still learning every day, aren't you?
Yeah. I did see, not too long ago, it was on TV, Coppola's first movie, You're a Big Boy Now.
Yes.
Oh, God, that was bad.
You think it was?
Oh, it was like a hippie sort of.
It was a little independent
sex
movie.
Story in a library or something like that.
Yeah, it was kind of his answer to, but it wasn't a good answer to it. But now I'm drawing a blank. What was the movie with Dustin Hoffman? The Graduate.
The Graduate, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was an answer to that. Yeah.
Well, that's what it was.
What was the question?
He was going for that crowd, audience.
That crowd, yeah.
And
I guess I didn't like the lead in that movie. He was so annoying.
Well, yeah, he was. But we did it again in Oklahoma, actually, with a movie we did called The Outsiders.
Oh, that's a great film. Yeah. Oh, no, that's a great film. The Outsiders is one of the best. And you worked with Clint Eastwood as well?
Yes, when I was in Italy, after I made that first horrible little movie, the Italians started hiring me because in Italy, the Italian movies weren't making any money in the American movies. You'd have two theaters side by side, one with an American movie, one with an Italian movie. There'd be lines around the block for the American movies no one was seeing the Italian movies. So they realized, well, wait a minute, we'll just make movies and say they're American.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the Italians started changing their names to Anglo kind of names. And they would come to America and shoot a week in the Grand Canyon.
So you're saying Clint Eastwood actually is Italian?
No, that's what they would hire Americans for these movies. And they hired Clint. He was a TV star. And they called me up and said, because they were going to bring it to America and shoot in Monument Valley. Mm-hmm. And so I became friends with Clint, and that's how I went to Hollywood with Clint. I was going to be his producer for a while.
Was that the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly?
Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, yes.
And some other spaghetti western, so-called. Yeah, that was a very good example of it. Yeah. What's so good about those Italian westerns is that they stylized the form. It was like existential cowboys or something. It was a different level.
Sergio Leone was brilliant.
Sergio Leone, yeah.
And He Francis Coppola said that his dad always told him, if you're going to steal from the best.
Yeah.
And Sergio Leone did that. He stole a Japanese samurai movie, and he called Yojimbo, and it was A Fistful of Dollars. And that was the beginning of the spaghetti westerns.
Yeah, amazing. Are they still making them?
I don't think so.
I haven't seen any coming out lately.
Westerns don't do well anymore. For some reason, I love Westerns.
Yeah.
You know, when I was doing Godfather, I had dinner with Mario Puzo, who wrote the book one time, and I said, how long did it take you to write the book? And he said, well, about 2 weeks. I said, you wrote that whole book in 2 weeks? And he said, well, I stole it from a book that was my favorite book when I was a kid called Heritage of the Desert, written by Zane Grey.
Zane Grey.
And so he said, I just took that book and changed the names, and instead of making it in the Old West, I made it in New York in the 40s. And it was the family, the patriarch and the kids and the adopted son, and it's the exact same structure, same movie, fighting over water rights instead of drugs. And I said, so if someone went and made Heritage of the Desert, they'd say, wow, they thought they'd think they stole the Godfather.
Zane Grey. My dad used to read Zane Grey. My dad was a big cowboy fan. He read all of Zane Grey. I never read him because it didn't interest me, but Zane Grey was big.
Big, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. I had no idea. Now, as a producer, do you sometimes get troublesome actors, I would think. Is that your responsibility to work out difficulties? I'm not saying Marlon Brando would be a problem, but...
Actually, Marlon was never a problem.
He was not.
I got along very well with Marlon.
Yeah, oh, did you? Yeah.
Yeah. Francis and Marlon butted heads a little bit
on
a couple of the movies. I had worked with Marlon before Godfather on a movie written from a book called Candy. It was a Terry Southern book.
Well, yeah, yeah.
And it was actually banned. It was considered a really...
That was the book we passed around in high school.
Yeah.
Candy.
And we made the movie, and the movie was very controversial because it was about a little teenage Lolita kind of girl and all these guys that were being with her. And today it would play on primetime TV.
On the Lifetime.
Back then it was very controversial back then. And Brando played a guru traveling around in a big 18-wheeler, semi-truck trailer with his temple preaching to people around the country.
Yeah.
And that's when I first became friends with him and met him.
Yeah. You know, I saw the Edward R. Murrow Brando thing. You Are There. What it was called. The one we put they put cameras in somebody's home. And he would talk to them from New York, wherever he was.
Right.
And the Brando, his father was living with him there. So here's my dad. His dad was sitting on the couch looking kind of out of it. But it was a real interesting look at Brando, and he seemed like a very nice gentleman. And someone told me that they went to his house, and he was like the most entertaining guy in the world, and he kept electric eels or something because he had some theory about generating electricity from electric eels, and he was a little eccentric. But
I was never invited to his house.
No. This was the one in Samoa or something,
Samoa. You know,
wherever he was at, yeah. So he wasn't a problem. Was there an actor that maybe was a problem that you had to intercede?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But you worked that out pretty good, or did he have to leave the shoot?
Everything that happens on a movie is the producer's fault.
Yeah.
I had an actress show up one morning, and the makeup guy said, oh, my darling, look at those circles under your eyes. I'm going to have some work ahead of me to get you looking good. You must have been partying last night. And she got furious, got in her car, and went away and called her agent in the studio. Right. And, of course, whose fault was that? Mine.
Yours.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was her name again? I missed it. Still can't. I mean, it's still probably litigious, maybe, if you said that.
Whose name?
The individuals involved.
Yeah, I shouldn't probably.
No. And then do you get involved in the, like, if there's something going on in the movie that you think is not right, do you say to Francis Ford Coppola, I think it should go this way. I don't think they should go upriver in the Mekong. I think they should just get out and walk or something.
No, the only time that most producers feel like they have the right to criticize or say anything is it's concerning the costs and the money.
Oh, yeah.
And I can go to France and say, if you consider doing it this way, we could save a lot of money. Yeah. And you used to always say, you know, when I cut out a scene, I'm supposed to save money, but I never do. But when I add a scene, it costs a fortune. Why is that?
Yeah. But, you know, one thing that bothered me, they put out a director's cut of Apocalypse Now, or Redux, or whatever they call it, you know. And it actually made the movie bad. You know, it was all these scenes that were cut out for a reason, I thought.
That's why they were cut out.
Yeah.
You put a movie together and you watch it, and it's 3 hours long, and you say, well, we got to cut. What do we do? Well, that scene can go, and that scene can go. And then when they put it out again, the studios do that, because it generates a new revenue stream. they'll put it out with all those old scenes that you were cut out of there that shouldn't have been in there in the first place.
So that's not the director doing that. That's not Coppola.
Sometimes the director loves that scene. He'll say, I'll save it for the director's cut.
Director's cut, so-called.
But it's there's always a sort of a tug of war between directors and the studio and the producers. Of, you know, the director wants everything.
Yeah. But, I thought that was like a perfect movie in terms of direction and just scenes. There was nothing, there was no fat on it at all. Everything was there for a reason. It was so striking. But then they put in those hookers in the plane and all that stuff.
And the French plantation.
Yeah.
The French plantation was trying to establish the history of Vietnam and why we were in that situation, yeah. What it was like. But it was another movie.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely another movie. But are you working on a project now?
I'm doing a mini series on the history of the Chickasaw Nation.
Oh, amazing. Fantastic. Is that shooting here in Oklahoma?
We're shooting here, and it's fascinating because what I did learn in school was that American history started with the Pilgrims landing. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that there was a whole world of 1,000 years prior to that of a civilization. Do you know the largest city in the North America was a place called Cahokia? It was a mound city with 65,000 people back in 900,000 A.D. Right outside St. Louis on the Mississippi River with all the Moundville Indian tribes. Then they did commerce up and down the Mississippi River. Mm-hmm. And there was a whole world that we were never taught about in school.
Yeah.
And so researching all of this stuff, we're finding out. That's what's great about making movies. Whatever movie you're on, you learn a lot about that world. I learned about radio and television doing a movie called UHF with Weird Al Yankovic.
Oh, I remember that. That was very good. That was very funny. Yeah, Weird Al's still around, too.
Weird Al's wonderful, and of all the actors I've ever worked with, he's my favorite.
Yeah, yeah. I guess we can say that. Yeah. No bags under his eyes, yeah. I'll tell you that. He just had a big hit, actually.
Yeah, he never stops. He keeps going. He's great. Stops.
And so are you involved also in the writing of this project, or are you doing any writing?
No. Yeah. No, we have a film program here at the Oklahoma City Community College.
Yes, we should mention that. A great one, and you are the artist in residence at it and helped get this all started.
And we have we've built a movie studio, and we have about 300 students a semester coming through. And they all work on all of our movies now. Wow. And the head of our film program here is a guy named Greg Malott, who went to UCLA and then was a teacher at USC, has his master's and made a lot of movies. And he's now here, and he is writing the Chickasaw movie. And our partners in the movie, my producing partner is John Harrington, and John is a Chickasaw, and he's the first Native American to walk in space. He's an astronaut.
Fantastic. What an amazingly good project. And where will we see that when it's done? Do you know where it would be broadcast?
I don't know. You know, I don't know. That's the Chickasaws own it. And what they have a thing called Chickasaw TV. They may put it on that. They may air it on OETA, which is the Oklahoma PBS TV station. But it'll be accessible.
Yeah. Great. I want to thank you for taking the time to join us here. I know you're busy. You got a busy schedule.
It was wonderful.
Schedule.
Thanks a lot.
Gray Frederickson, thank you so much. An honor. Gray Frederickson. Godfather of Oklahoma film training. Ray Frederickson.